Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jax weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big football and golf show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. We are really excited to begin this year's edition of Football Picks. We are going to start with week one, and in tandem with this, we will have a PGA Tour recap segment on the show. So it's a way of integrating two shows into one show, but our entire crew is here. Ron is here, John is here, Andy's here. You've known them throughout the years, doing picking the games and doing the rants about the games as well. So we won't waste any more time because I know Andy's only going to be here for a few minutes. Same for Ron. So with already two games on the table, we're going to have a Dick Cow first. We're going to have a recap segment in week one. It's possible because we have had two week zero games and a surprising amount of juice in these 2 week zero games, but... let's not delay. We've got a lot of picks to go, a lot of season to go, and we've got a lot of juice to come in the football season, both college and pro. But this week, just the college, we'll do two picks here, and then the rest of the way, two college picks and two pro picks. You know the deal by now. Let's hit it! Football picks week one, and the slate refreshes anew. It was a little bit of a rougher season for us as a panel last year. Nobody finished above 500, but Ron in New Jersey did the best out of everybody in the panel in 2018 with a 29-30-1 record. Pretty close to 500, so I think, all things considered, with the crazy year that was in college and pro, pretty good job. Andy was in second place last year at 28-30-2. John was in third place last year at 26-29-5. And Dave was in fourth place, last place, basically, at 22-36-2. Guest picks last year, 27-32-1. And we resume. So everybody is ready for a new season. And this new season is upon us. And a couple teams got ahead of the curve. 2 week zero games, Florida, Miami, and then Arizona, Hawaii. We'll recap those first, and then we'll get into our picks for the week. And that's how it starts. I'm very excited. Got the gang back together. And let's introduce our panel one by one. We start with the winner of last year's contest. And Ron, congratulations. And welcome back. How's it going tonight?
Hey, Dave. How are you, man?
Doing all right. And also joining us, Andy in Seattle. Andy, good to have you back. How's it going?
Yo, it's going to be another fast season. I'm already blinking, and it's middle of October, and the first matching game on a Tuesday's playing before my eyes. So get ready.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And John in Connecticut, our third panelist, joining us. How's it going, John?
Doing well, Dave. Thanks for having us back. Should be another fun year. Yeah, and Andy's right. We'll close our eyes, and it'll be like Thanksgiving. So we got to enjoy the season.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it really does go fast. It's crazy. And our guest picker this week, Mike in North Jersey. Welcome back, Mike. How's it going?
I'm good, Dave. Thanks for having me on. This should be a fun show with the group we have tonight. And I think a bit unfortunately this year, I now have an affiliation with Rutgers, so I have to put myself through the torture of their season. But we'll have some fun tonight, at least.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, are we going to be nice to Rutgers now because Mike's part of Rutgers? I don't know. That's fun. All right, so like I said, we have a last week's action. It's kind of – this is a first for our show. In week one, but the 2 week zero games, surprising amount of juice, as I said. So to start with the recap, let's go to Ron in New Jersey and talk a little bit about the teams that played a week ago.
Yeah, first time, week zero really bought some juice, Dave. But I guess that means it's probably not the last time because the ratings were, did really well. So we're gonna get the week zero game next year and probably. Every year from here on out, and that's fine with me because there was really no juice last week in you know, baseball, preseason football. So bring it on, you know. You got two good games. You got Miami and Florida, which, you know, turned out to be a really well-played game going down the stretch. Florida definitely showed some flaws. Miami's freshman quarterback, or redshirt freshman quarterback, looked decent. You know, nothing special. Almost looked like a hold-the-fort type guy, thinking and dunking, not making mistakes. Their defense had a bunch of juice, and, you know, they were really in position to win that game, after that last turnover in the fourth quarter where, they get it up, in the red zone. Could have scored a touchdown, decided to go for a chip shot field goal, missed that, and, you know, a couple plays later, Florida's thrown it down the field and taking the lead and, you know, not looking back. So that game could have went either way. Miami definitely showed me more moxie than I was expecting, and Florida, you know, they're a good team, they're a solid team. I don't think they're the eighth best team in the country by any means. So I think they're a little overhyped going into this year, but it was a good game nonetheless. And I only saw the first half of the Arizona Hawaii game, but you know, it was a typical Hawaii game, right? They were making and booming down the field, putting up a ton of points, and Arizona this year looked like Arizona last year. You had Khalil Tate, you know, making a ton of mistakes, staying in the pocket when he should have been running. I know he started to open up more in the second half, but John was right when he said that, you know, we might have missed a big one in not saying that Kevin Sumlin's on the hot seat, because if he gets off to a bad start this year, I mean, watch out. He might be the first coach to go.
Yeah, that was a good call by John. Definitely an oversight on our part collectively. And quite an interesting start to the season. A little too interesting from the standpoint of the Wildcats, so... let's go to Andy and get your recap of last week's week zero action.
Yeah, love me some week zero action. So last week I was bored stiff Saturday morning, and I read this article, or I skimmed it, and it was, I guess the first week zero game actually took place in like 1983 between Penn State and Nebraska. But back then, week one actually started like at a normal time, like after Labor Day, like September 8th or whatever. So week zero back then was actually week one. Week one was week two, kind of like your Sunday night is no longer Monday night speak from 10 years ago. But anyway, I was watching, I watched that first half of the Florida game at the bar, and then I was at a baseball game with tuning in on my phone here and there. Had Florida laying the point, and as John and I were commiserating via text, they left a few points on the board in the first half. A couple, quarterback, running back, option handoff exchanges went boo-boo, you know, something that you would see in, you know, early August, you know, scrimmage. They got to clean that crap up. Again, Felipe Franks, he oozes talent. But you got to, I don't know, he's got like Steven Garcia's brain. You know, he makes some really head-scratching decisions. And, but I do think Florida is in the – they're going to go in the right direction this year. I think the SEC East, is second fiddle to Georgia anyway. So, you know, 9 wins, whatever it may be, you know, they're trending in the proper direction with Dan Mullen. As Ron said, Miami, they're okay at quarterback. He's not going to confuse anyone with the gunslinger. But, you know, they got their work cut out for him. But it was entertaining – ending. Florida really would be kicking themselves if they really foobarred that game. I believe they committed a pass interference on third and China. I think it was like third and like 36 or something like that. And, you gotta clean that crap up. But, you know, game one, we move on. The second game, Hawaii, if you remember when we do this preview next year, they are the kings of week zero. Going back to, you know, 4 years ago when they played Cal in Australia, true story. They just Hawaii. Few rules when they're underdogs on the island. You might as well take Hawaii. And they look good. Even that quarterback, he threw a handful of interceptions. A lot of it, I think, came via like the tip pass, and it might have been like not his fault style, but I think that was more of a function of Arizona being sloppy than Hawaii being like that good. I'm about three quarters of away in your guys' preview from last week, and everyone seems to be very high on Hawaii this year. So I'd like to get on board on that ship, and hopefully we'll have some fun, and maybe they'll be in a different bowl this December where they're not playing in their home building, you know, because they always seem to be playing in their own stadium in that, you know, Aloha Bowl.
Right, right. I should go back and see what the over-under on that was, on that team was for the year. But, I mean, can't do it now. It's they already played a game. Now let's go to John and let's get your recap.
Yeah, you guys did a pretty good job. You know, I think Miami might have something with Jaren Williams. I mean, obviously pretty raw in terms of his skill level, or like how he playing the quarterback position, rather. But you can definitely tell there's some talent there. You know, he is pretty mobile. He eluded the rush well. You could see why he was named the starter over the other guys on the team, Nikosi Perry and Martel, who transferred. I guess, I don't know if they moved him to receiver or something. That's kind of bizarre. But regardless, you can definitely see why Williams was named the starter. And he had a pretty good game, despite the fact that he was sacked 10 times. And, yeah, that ending sequence was just crazy when it just seemed like play after play, Florida was giving them more chances to win the game, and they had a chance to put it in the end zone at the end, but Florida held on. I completely agree with Ron that you watch them and like, okay, they're a nice team in the SEC. I don't think they're the eighth best team in the country. You know, again, it is week zero, and they can certainly improve as the year goes on, but their offensive line wasn't very good, and Franks made some just really bad decisions. That one interception he threw was just terrible. I don't know why, you know, they're throwing it in that situation either. So they're ahead by 4 points and late in the game, and they're passing the ball. That was kind of surprising. But that definitely was an entertaining game, and I think both teams, you know, will take some positives from that, especially Miami with their young quarterback, and he'll only continue to get better. And then the second game, yeah, Kevin Sumlin, I mean, he just looked so disinterested on the sidelines. And they're just, you know, Khalil Tate had amazing stats, but if you watch the game, it just didn't seem like he really did that much, to be honest with you. And they should have just shredded that Hawaii defense. And, you know, we talked about it on the preview. You know, we like Hawaii, but their defense is not good at all. And they should have, you know, they should have done much better than they did on offense. And when you think about it, Hawaii had 6 turnovers. Cole McDonald threw 4 interceptions, got benched for the backup, Chevin Chirero, or I don't know how you pronounce his name, something like that. And he came in, and he had a great drive at the end of the game. It was like an 11 o'clock start. Like, I watched a little bit, fell asleep, and then woke up. Like, it was almost 2 a.m. for the end of it. But it was very entertaining, and, you know, Tate has the last chance to kind of to salvage the game and get them down the field, and it's sprinting for the end zone, but he's tackled at the 1 yard line, and it was just crazy. And then even him, he just walks off the field after that. There was no emotion, like playing like with his other teammates, or, you know, obviously congratulating the Hawaii players. There's just something wrong with that Arizona team. And Sumlin, who would have thought it? Like, he was like the hot candidate for NFL jobs like 5 years ago, and he might not make it through half the year here at Arizona. He is just not good at all. So I guess we'll have to see if the lines adjust themselves. We'll continue to fade Arizona if someone's going to look that disinterested on the sidelines, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's shades of Louisville last year, right? So now let's go to Mike in North Jersey. Anything you'd like to add as far as week zero?
Sure, I can give you a few things. I'm here. It's freaking new computer just playing ads, and I can't get the sound off. But there we go. Yeah, that Miami Florida game is definitely very interesting. John made a few points I was going to make. I mean, that sequence where Florida gets the ball back on downs, and they got 4 minutes and 20 seconds left, and they're winning, and they throw on first down, and they lead to an interception. I mean, really, based off of that, they kind of deserve to lose the game, but you got to give credit to their defense there for stepping up in a big spot shutting down the Miami attack. But, you know, even though my fandom aligned with Notre Dame, you know, I do think it's a good thing if we can get Miami back to a better level that they've been at for like the last 10 or even 15 years now. It's I think college football overall is better if Miami's a factor. So Florida escapes, but I wasn't entirely shocked that game was closer than the point spread might indicate. You just got to figure that Miami in a neutral site game against a highly ranked Florida team, they weren't going to go out there and get embarrassed. They were going to come in with a big effort, and they did. Wasn't quite enough, but we'll see if they can build off that. Then that second game, that was just a wild, wild finish, because it definitely looked like Khalil Tate was going to get that for a touchdown. And again, John made a couple points I was going to make. You know, it doesn't bode well for Arizona being a Power 5 team going up against a Group of 5 team, Hawaii, and Hawaii committing six turnovers. They only punted the ball once in the entire game. But if you go and you play a team, they turn the ball over six times and you still lose, when you, frankly, you must have an edge in athleticism and overall talent, that really doesn't look good. So I'll definitely second the Sumlin being on the hot seat theory there, because that's just not acceptable. And for Hawaii, obviously they're not going to have a stature like Miami will, but I also like when Hawaii is at least, they don't necessarily need to be good, but if they can be entertaining, it's always nice, because, you know, you get that Hawaii game starting at 11 p.m. Eastern time, kind of gives us one more game to cap off the night. And when Hawaii's entertaining, you know, it can be fun to tune into those. So we'll see if McDonald or Chevin Cordero will continue at quarterback for Hawaii. I would think they would go back to McDonald, at least to start with. But we'll see where they go, and hopefully they can continue to be a source of entertainment for us degenerates.
Good stuff. Yeah, I mean, Hawaii is always that good watch right in deep into the night, you know? So without further delay, let us go to the picks. And Ron, we're going to give it to you first for your week one football picks. I mean, and when you're ready to go, we're ready for you.
All right. Yeah, Dave, I'll certainly do it. Before I do, I just want to welcome, you know, Mike to the Rutgers family. You know, got a lot of proud moments to look forward to in the future. Let me bring up that game real quick. Because, you know, I did tell you today, Dave, that I would love to take UMass plus 15.5 on the road against Rutgers on Friday night. I can't see Rutgers covering 15 points against a high school team, let alone UMass. But UMass might be the one Division I football team that is actually that bad that Rutgers covers. So, you know, I hope to God that this is Chris Ash's last season at Rutgers. When you talk about a clown, I mean, this is a guy whose career record I think is something like 4-31 at Rutgers, and he's acting like he's Bill Belichick. He won't name the starting quarterback until the game against UMass on a Friday night. And I'm thinking to myself, like, who is he? You know, who's this magic quarterback that he's saving this for? It's either a sophomore quarterback who threw 4 touchdowns and 18 interceptions last year, or a kid who couldn't start at Texas Tech for 4 years. Who is this guy? Who's he fucking kidding? He's playing UMass. UMass is as bad as playing, you know, Howell High School, and he thinks he's like some secret genius who's got this, you know, diabolical plan up his sleeve to get one over on everybody. What a fucking clown. That school, you know, I know we laugh at them, and, you know, Petey brings it on, but man, they deserve anybody better than Chris Ash. And you know, it's going to be a long year for, you know, Rutgers and Connecticut, you know, and So I feel for John, I feel for me and Mike, and what a disaster. I just wanted to get that out of the way because that is a shit show, and I don't know who's watching Rutgers and UMass on Friday.
Ron, if you think that's bad, just wait till I tell you what Randy Edsall did this week with the UConn depth chart. So just wait.
I mean, it you talk about a shit show of alumni here. Rutgers and Connecticut are. You know, please put them into the Ivy League or something like that and let them win 4 or 5 games a year. What a shit show it's going to be this year. But I digress. I just had to get that off my chest. My two picks, number one, I'm going Boston College plus 4.5 at home against Virginia Tech. Boston College could lose. You know, I don't know what Virginia Tech is. I was reading an interesting story a couple weeks ago on SI, you know, if anybody ever still partakes in SI. But they had an interesting story about Justin Fuente and, you know, what we talked about last week on the preview show about, you know, all the people leaving his program and how bad they looked last year. And I mean, I don't know how much to believe of it or not, but, you know, he seemed to throw blame at kids who he either A, kicked off the team or left the program on their own will for trying to sabotage the locker room last year. I don't know if it's true or not. I kind of think it's a bad look for him either way you slice it. And they lost a lot of talent from last year. And I can't tell what they're going to be. You never know what Virginia Tech's going to be. But to open a game on the road against Boston College, who we all know, I mean, we know Boston College style, right? They're going to run the ball 50 times a game. They're going to keep it, they're going to keep the score close. You know, the winning team's probably going to score in the 20s if they're lucky. So that 4.5 on the road for Virginia Tech is a lot, in my opinion. So I'm going to take Boston College plus 4.5 at home. And my second pick, I'm taking Notre Dame minus 20 against Louisville. I think Louisville has the chance to be one of the worst Power 5 teams this year. I mean, what Petrino did there, we talked about it last week, but I mean, he decimated that entire program with the way he ran roughshod the past couple of years. And it's going to take a lot for them to rebuild and get back to that the Louisville teams of the early 2010s. I mean, they're a mess right now, depth chart wise. Notre Dame is rolling. Ian Book is, you know, he's a legit quarterback. They could put up points. So I'm going to take Notre Dame minus 20 on the road against Louisville. I mean, it doesn't matter. It could be in Louisville. It could be in South Bend. It doesn't matter. Notre Dame's going to roll over them, and I think you know, Louisville gets off to a rough start. We'll see how they take it from there.
All right, thanks, John. Thanks very much, Ron, for the picks. And now we go to Andy in Seattle, and Andy, we're ready for your Week 1 selections.
All right, here we go. Let's try to get a couple blind, or what's the saying? The blind squirrel gets the acorn. So here we go. couple acorns here. Game number one, we're gonna just start tomorrow. Why not? We're gonna take Cincinnati giving 2.5 points against UCLA. I heard you guys talk about the both teams in your preview last week. You know, Joe Schmo from Idaho is gonna walk into Buffalo Wild Wings tomorrow and gonna be like, Cincinnati got a football team. They're favorite against UCLA. It's like, yeah, they were 11-2 last year, and UCLA has hit some, I don't know if it's rock bottom, but they've hit a rough patch. I know Chip Kelly is trying to bring them back, but I also don't remember what Cincinnati's bringing back this year off that 11-2 season when they beat Virginia Tech in that bowl game on New Year's Eve. They won, but they didn't cover. But anyway, I believe both Ron and John said Cincinnati should be like second tier in that America Athletic Conference. And I know they played UCLA last year in Pasadena. They won that game. I just feel if you're going to represent that conference, if you're going to be in the upper echelon of that conference, you got to beat a middle-of-the-road Pac-12 school in your own building, and you better start the season with some proper momentum. So what better place to start week one than tomorrow, game one? I'll take Cincinnati giving 2.5 against a UCLA Bruins team that is obviously still searching to find some kind of identity with Chip Kelly in the mix. Game number two, we are going to move to Sunday night and take a Houston Cougar team that's got no defense, as John documented, but they're getting a boatload of points against Oklahoma. You're getting 23.5 points on a Sunday night in Norman. And the logic in this game is Holgorsen is coaching the Cougars. They got a great quarterback. We all know Oklahoma is coming off of back-to-back, belly-to-belly Heisman Award situations with Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield, and now they got the former Alabama quarterback in the mix. You guys really nailed it on the head with the analysis last week. Oklahoma is going to go up and down the field against Houston. As I said before, and I'll say again, with these big point spreads, you know, sometimes we're on the other side. We'll take the team laying the points. You plant the seed and you let it grow. You come back in a couple hours and boom, they're up 35-10 or whatever. But in this instance, a team with a prolific offense like Houston, 23.5 points, they could be down 30. Down 30 points, and you got that backdoor opportunity. And that's all you're asking for in this game. You're just asking for a backdoor opportunity. Hopefully it's not 28-3 after one, because then your chances of a backdoor opportunity is very slim. But if you can just kind of hang around the defense, you take a D+, don't want an F, the D+ effort out of the defense, and you might have a chance with the backdoor cover. I believe the first time they played last year, maybe, or maybe 2 years ago, and Houston hung around. Obviously, it's a different type of cast and characters, but I don't know. Give me Houston getting 23.5 for game number two to pair up with Cincinnati -2.5 against UCLA week one college pigskin.
Love it, Andy. Thanks for the picks. Now let me go to my picks, and let's start it out for week one, Labor Day weekend. The weekend I will be spending in Denver with my friend Coach. And in Denver, we're going to be watching some of these games. We will start in the big, I don't know what you call it, the kickoff classic. There are two of them. One of them's in Atlanta. The other one's in Dallas. We're going to go to the Dallas one, and specifically Arlington. And the theme for these picks this week is screw the Pac-12, because I'm getting a little tired of the Pac-12 talking about schedules and this and the whole thing. I mean, just win a game in a big spot, for Christ's sake. They can't do it. So we're going to take Auburn, giving 3.5, with a true freshman quarterback. They settled on Bo Nix to start the game. With a guy on the hot seat in Gus Malzahn, all these things don't line up to Auburn winning the game. And yet, I'm going to pick them because I think, as much as I like Oregon, you got to admit, they are one of the most overhyped teams of the offseason. So this is a scenario where I think the Pac-12 team has to prove it on the field before anybody starts buying into them. So we're going to give the points. We're going to go Auburn -3.5, game number one. Game number two, this is a pick that I think everybody saw coming all summer long. And even though they lost everybody, I mean, they lost all the big players, we're still going to take Fresno State, getting 13.5 at USC. This is another scenario where USC has been dogging it against the spread. They have been one of the worst against the spread teams over the last three seasons. Pretty much the entire Clay Helton era, they cannot cover a spread. And so you're telling me that they're getting two touchdowns at home? No way. No way. I know they've got an relatively experienced quarterback. They've got an improving defense. It's a very talented team. And they even have a newer-looking building because they renovated the Coliseum in the summer. Looks very nice. But the team, I don't think, will look that nice. Even in a best-case scenario, they're going to come out of that game a little flat. So I'm going to go with Fresno State getting 13.5 to go along with Auburn giving 3.5 for week number one college football. And now we go to John in Connecticut. And John, when you're ready, we're ready for your picks. There you go. Okay, John? John?
Yep, I'm here, Dave. Okay. I was on mute. I was on mute there for a second. Before I get to my picks, I'll digress for a second, like Ron. So, yeah, it's pretty bad that Chris Ash is playing games like not naming the starting quarterback. Well, listen to this. Randy Edsall refused to release a depth chart, like a two deep, like every other team in the country. He released a participation list, which was like 80 players. Like, what the fuck are you doing? You're playing Wagner. Like, who cares? Like, put out a depth chart like all every other team in America. You want fans to be interested in your program? Like, it's almost as if he'd be happy if they played at like 2 a.m. on the moon because he doesn't want to see how shitty, you know, he doesn't want people to see how shitty the team is. You're releasing a participation list playing Wagner. You think you're afraid that you're going to get tape on you and they're, you know, you're going to, all your wonderful schemes are going to be laid out there? What, such a joke. Like, seriously, a participation list. That really gets me. But in any event, let's get to my picks. So I'm going to be a little odd with a couple of these games because I like to follow like some of these odder teams, like less obscure teams. So first off, we'll go Friday night, and I'm going to take Wake Forest giving 4 points to Utah State. I wish this was three. I saw 3.5 earlier, but in any event, we'll go with the 4 points. So one of the key things that you look at in terms of handicapping early season games are obviously, you know, coaching changes, number one, you know, returning starters, number two. So in this game, two of those things really plays a factor. Utah State had a great season last year. They were 10-2, 11-2, something like that. They returned their dynamic quarterback, Jordan Love. However, they only returned one starter on the offensive line, which is a problem. And I think even more of a problem is their new coach. Obviously, Matt Wells left for Texas Tech, as we discussed on the show last week. And in comes an old friend of theirs, Gary Anderson, who coached them, I want to say, like 2009 to like 2012, maybe, somewhere in that timeline, like a decade ago. And as a fan of a team who brought back their old coach trying to get back to glory, let me tell you, it doesn't work. Not to mention, this guy, Anderson, if you remember, he did leave Utah State for Wisconsin, had a good season or two, then left for Oregon State, and then literally quit on the team after like three games. And he realized, oh shit, this team is terrible. And he just was like, all right, peace out. And he quit on the team. And now you're going to bring this guy in after 2 years to coach your team at Utah State. I mean, you know, maybe we don't know the entire situation. You know, maybe there was other family concerns or whatnot. But it just seemed like from the story I read that he basically quit on the team. And I just don't think that's an upgrade or a positive for them at the moment, having him back as head coach. Wake Forest, they're kind of a bizarre team. They usually like win by 20 or lose by 20. They had a good end of the year last year. They were 5-6, and they destroyed Duke to get to a bowl game, and then they beat Memphis, and that was with Jamie Newman as quarterback, and he was named starter the other day. So they have a little more continuity, and I just feel like they're the better team at the moment, heading into the start of the season than Utah State. So we'll take Wake Forest minus the 4 points against Utah State. And then game two will be on Saturday at noon, and I really wish we had done this show yesterday because the line was 21, and now it's only 20. But I'll still take it. I'll take Louisiana Lafayette getting 20 points against Mississippi State. And this game is a neutral site game being played at the Superdome in New Orleans. Couple things here. So if you remember back in the decade when Lafayette went to all these bowl games, they went to like five New Orleans bowls in a row, and they pretty much filled the stadium. So this will kind of be like a home game for that, number one. So I like that factor on this. Number two, they return almost everyone on their team. They have a trio of running backs that ran for at least 800 yards last year. And I think that that's going to be a key factor in this game because Mississippi State just lost their entire defensive line to the NFL. So obviously the SEC, their replacements are going to be fairly talented, as you might think. However, I think being the first game, I think Lafayette's going to be able to run the ball and, you know, control some clock a little bit. And that helps with a big spread game. Not to mention, Nick Fitzgerald is now gone from Mississippi State, and in comes Tommy Stevens, who is a Penn State transfer, and that's important because he did, you know, Joe Moorhead, their coach, came from Penn State. But I think there could be some internal drama here because the starter was supposed to be Caden Thompson, who had been the backup to Fitzgerald, and then
Stevens is named the starter, and then Thompson immediately hits the transfer portal. So they have no backup quarterback, basically. So they better hope Stevens doesn't get hurt. Their offense last year, they just went through some just horrible stretches of offensive play. They'd score like 6 points in a game. That bowl game against Iowa was just ugly, ugly offense. I like Joe Moorhead. I think he's a decent coach. But I just think Lafayette will have the home crowd advantage. Plus, I think they'll be able to run the ball fairly successfully. And when these two teams played last year, it was just a mauling at Mississippi State. It was like 55-3 or something. So I think a little revenge on Lafayette's mind, too. Not saying they're going to win this game, but I just definitely think it'll be competitive. So we'll take the bunch of points here. So give me Lafayette plus 20, and then the first pick, Wake Forest minus 4 for college football week number 1.
All right. Thanks, John. And now we go to the last set of picks, and that's the guest picks from Mike in North Jersey. Mike, take it away.
Well, quickly, thank you to Ron for the welcome to the Rutgers football family. Would have been much more fun to be joining this around the end of my high school days and the Ray Rice era. I actually went to a whole bunch of Rutgers games back then, and they were fun to watch. Bit of a disaster right now, but hopefully things improve, although they definitely got to get rid of Chris Ash. And, I mean, that quarterback last year was a disaster, so... we'll see, but getting to my picks here, I'm actually going to pick two games that have already been picked by our panel, but whatever, I do have some faith in these. So I'm also going to go with Houston. Now, I'm sure Andy's line is legit at 23.5. I did just bet the game about an hour ago at plus 23, so I guess for the purposes of our contest, you can give me 23.5, I'll take it. But I'll echo a lot of Andy's points there. There's definitely a chance for even if Houston could just avoid getting completely blown out and they're around in the fourth quarter, you know that Oklahoma might slow down a little bit knowing they have the game in hand. And we know that Houston has some talent up front, a very talented offense, and so they might backdoor cover. But you know, this could be a fun matchup. Oklahoma was the highest scoring team in college football last year. Houston was fifth. I agree with the points you guys were making. I think Ron specifically during the preview show that I don't know if Jalen Hurts is a perfect fit for this Oklahoma offense. Now, listen, we know he's very capable with his legs. I do think that when you combine Hurts with Kennedy Brooks and Trey Sermon in the backfield, look, they're going to be able to get some yardage there, but he might not be the type of passer that will really get this Oklahoma offense running in at full throttle. But you know, it is an offense with a ton of playmakers. CeeDee Lamb, definitely, I'd be very shocked if we don't see him on Sundays. And also, I know that they have a trio of three five-star freshman receivers, so we'll see if any of those guys are ready to make an impact. The Oklahoma offensive line, they do have to replace some guys, but luckily for them, they're going up against a Houston team, which was just the fourth worst defense in the country. And obviously, they've lost Ed Oliver. Now, the hope for Houston is that they've added, they do have several transfers and JUCO players coming in, so hopefully just an infusion of some new talent can maybe help shake things up there. They can play a little bit better. But obviously, De'Aaron King, just one of the more talented quarterbacks in the country. I averaged nearly 4 touchdowns a game. He produced 50 total touchdowns in the games he played. A couple good receivers in Marquez Stevenson and Keith Corbin. So I think at 23.5 points, like, listen, you give Oklahoma 51 points, I definitely think that Houston can at least get a push out of that. So I don't think it's a bad pick here, especially with that backdoor potential going on there, because you know that Houston's going to keep playing even if the scores are particularly close and Oklahoma might close up shop. Now, for my second pick, I was thinking about going with the Northwestern getting points against Stanford, but you know, the more I looked at this, I was like, well, Northwestern, there's some signs that was smoke and mirrors last year. So I'm going to piggyback Ron's pick here, and I'm going to go Notre Dame. Now, I guess you can give Ron this number too, because once again, I made this bet an hour ago on the DraftKings Sportsbook app. And Notre Dame now is only getting 19 points at Louisville. Now, the Louisville, what I really see with this game is, and Ron made some good points, is that Louisville had, you know, their defensive line was terrible last year. They allowed 277 yards rushing a game and 44 points a game. Now, you put that up against a Notre Dame offensive line that could have four NFL players on it. That, to me, that's a mismatch. And if you allow a team to control the game so much with their offensive line, they can just do what they want on offense. Now, you do have a couple of concerns with Notre Dame. Obviously, Dexter Williams is gone, so, and I'm not really sold on the Notre Dame running backs. Jafar Armstrong has some raw talent, but I don't think he necessarily has the best instincts as a runner, so we'll see. I think Chase Claypool, we'll see you know, if he can use that 6'4 frame of his maybe to exploit some matchups. They obviously have to replace Julian Love, but I just think Notre Dame, with Ian Book firmly entrenched as the starting quarterback, with that offensive line, it's going to be a mismatch. And a Notre Dame team that's going to be pissed off after getting embarrassed against Clemson last year. Look for them to, you know, kind of rub Louisville's face in the dirt a little bit if they can. So I'm pretty confident here that Notre Dame will cover the 19 points at what was formerly known as Papa John's Stadium in Louisville.
All right. Thank you very much for the picks, Mike. And thanks, everybody, for the picks for week one. We will say goodnight to Ron and Andy. Good to hear from you guys again. Any final thoughts for
Andy? Andy's actually still here for you're got to deal with me for another 15 more minutes. So the haircut appointment got delayed. Haircut appointment got delayed 15 minutes.
Oh, is that right? No sweat, man. All right, Ron. If you want, you can stay with us. But otherwise, we'll say goodnight for the time being. Any final thoughts? Otherwise.
Yeah, I'm going to drop off, but good luck to everybody's picks, and look forward to hopefully getting a couple wins and talking again next week. Take care, guys.
All right, fella. Take care. Good to hear you, Ron. All right. Ron in New Jersey joining us on the program, and now we wish him good luck for week one. So, Andy, yeah, we're glad to have you with us for these 50 minutes. We'll make the most of this time as we get into the PGA Tour recap. This has been quite an interesting year. And I don't know if I mentioned it on the podcast, but Rory McIlroy won the Tour Championship on Sunday, and that's a big story. I think he hadn't had the best of years. Overall, a lot of ups and downs. Maybe not the most competitive tournament, especially in the majors, but overall, pretty good juice. So, Mike, I'm going to actually start with you, since you have a pretty good overarching perspective on the entire scenarios, and then I'm going to do the same thing for John, and I'll do the same thing for Andy. So let's get your thoughts on the season in review, and then we'll get into some more particular stuff after.
Well, I didn't, but after our Masters recap, we did talk about, well, where is this victory, that victory by Tiger Woods, going to rank in history? And I think just you know, taking an overall look at it now, when you look at how Brooks Koepka was able to come back and win the next major after that, and then nearly win the U.S. Open, and the fact that Tiger Woods was able to beat him during this stretch of dominant golf, it does raise that victory up a few notches. So, of course, I don't want to say that, but it's true. So I do have to say that, all right, that raises it up a few notches. So credit to Tiger there. But, you know, I think it looks more and more now like, I don't know. I mean, it depends on how much of this guy's word you take as gospel, but it doesn't seem like he's able to play very often. So, and you know, if he's not able to play all that often, how ready is he going to be in these tournaments? So that's looking more and more like a last hurrah. But that's his last major, which I do think, if it gun to my head, I would say it was at this point. It's a nice way to go out. I guess we'll go over the FedEx Cup, because that's what we were kind of talking about on our last, when we did our, not PGF, PGA is not the last major anymore, the Open Championship recap. You know, the doomsday scenario with that weird format with the, FedEx Cup leader starting at minus 10 and the second guy starting at minus 8. Well, you know, it ended up working out because McIlroy shot the lowest score for the week and he won the tournament anyway. So, great job by him winning the Tour Championship. But, you know, this debate now has seemed to come up that who's the player of the year? Is it Koepka or is it McIlroy? It's definitely Koepka. Because the bottom line is we judge seasons and judge careers by what you do in the majors. And McIlroy had two top tens, you know, but he didn't have a chance really to win a major this year. So you can't – there's no way he's player of the year. I don't care what his strokes gain stats were. I don't care if he had one of the better seasons ever in, quote, strokes gained off the tee. He wasn't a factor at the majors. He missed the cut in the Open Championship in his hometown, basically. So he's not. And I just think it's a great example for it just shows you how we judge golf. I mean, look, McIlroy, he won three times. He won the Tour Championship. He won the Players' Championship. But I think anyone would take his 2011 year or his 2012 year over this because he won majors in those years. Just in the same way that we would take Tiger Woods in 2019 over Tiger Woods in 2013, where he won five times but didn't do anything in the majors. So a silly argument being made there. And the Tour Championship, you know, I do think they could get into a bit of a debacle if they have, like, the wrong thing happen with, well, some guy shoots 8-under for the week and another guy shoots 12-under, but the guy shoots 8-under wins the tournament, but that didn't happen. But it was definitely nice to see. And I think John said this in our group text that you know, he's watched more of the Tour Championship this year than he did in like the however many years prior. And I was right in that same boat. I mean, I'd watch the Tour Championship the Thursday afternoon and stuff and Friday afternoon, but wouldn't see it much on the weekend. So it was nice to be able to watch that. And one thing, though, that does have to be changed is that these first two tournaments had way, way, way too much effect on who was going into the Tour Championship 1-2 and thus getting the best two starting spots. Like, I'm sorry, but there's – and don't tell me, oh, you don't understand how a playoff works. No, I understand how a playoff works, but we need to give some weight to what you did during the season. There's no way that Justin Thomas and Patrick Cantlay – should have been 1-2 going into the Tour Championship. I mean, it just didn't make sense to me, but that's how it worked. Luckily, neither of them won the Tour Championship. So an exciting end. It would have been a little bit more fun if Brooks Koepka could have stuck with Rory like up to the last couple holes. But it was, I think, pretty fitting to see, you know, I know we're going to have some regular tournaments technically in 2019, but for all intents and purposes, the last tournament of the last season of the decade to have the two guys who have won the most majors in this last decade dueling it out with nine holes to go. So a fitting end to the golf season, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. So let's go to John and let's get your PGA Tour and review recap scenario.
Yeah, we won't go over the majors again. We had our individual shows about that. We'll just talk about the playoffs and the Tour Championship, and I completely agree with just about everything that Mike had said. You know, I get it. I understand they want to make the playoff events more valuable than regular season events, consider they're calling it the playoffs, but there's before that win, I think Justin Thomas had like one top 10 in like the last 3 months or something. There's no way that he should have jumped to number one in the standings just by winning the BMW Championship. That was a complete joke. I guess they made the points as if like winning a playoff event is like winning five regular events throughout the season, and that's just too much. I mean, I get it. They don't want to go back to where I believe it was like one of the first two FedEx Cup scenarios where Vijay Singh had clinched it before they even got to the championship. And I get that. That's a little too much. But yeah, I don't know what's going on. Chainsaw action there. I don't know what that was. But,
what was that?
Yeah. So I get it. They don't want to do that situation where the guy has it locked up before the Tour Championship, but someone that has only won one time all year is going to be your number one seed and in line for $15 million heading into the Tour Championship. I mean, that was just not right. But
I'm glad that it worked out how it did, where the person who shot the lowest score also won the tournament, because, you know, if you had some crazy scenario where the winner was only 13 under and that happened to be Justin Thomas and he only shot 3 under for the week, well, like say Xander Schauffele shot 10 under or something, that would have been just kind of stupid. And you could easily see a situation like that happening in future years, but they were lucky that it worked out this way. And yeah, there was definitely a lot of juice for this event with, you know, baseball kind of in the dog days of the season. Preseason football is essentially meaningless these days. No one plays and the coaches don't do any scheme, so it's pointless to even follow that. So this was pretty much all that I followed over the weekend for sports besides the two week zero games. So yeah, I definitely watched a ton more than I would usually do in September, where, you know, football's in full swing. So I think a great job. I think the schedule, the move to August, I think is going to work out long term. And this season of championships thing they have with a tournament every month, I think that's going to be pretty good going forward. And yeah, I think Koepka has to be player of the year. I mean, come on, he won a major and could have won two other majors and had the same number of wins as Rory. I don't care that Rory won the Players and the FedEx Cup. I just don't care. I think Koepka is clearly a player of the year in my opinion. But overall, I think, like I said, the changes are good to the schedule, and I think I think the tour is, got lucky with the stroke situation this year. But overall, it was an exciting tournament, and like to see that going forward.
Yeah, well said, I would say, John. And I'm surprised that there was even a discussion about that Player of the Year scenario, because to me, I thought it was Koepka the whole way. Like, he was in the top five, like every event I was seeing. I think that he did. He was playing at a high level for more events than Rory was. I think that's safe to say. So, anyway, let's go to Andy and let's get your PGA Tour interview for 2019.
Yeah, this will probably be my last dip, but you guys nailed it on the head. I would lean Koepka, obviously Player of the Year. I prefer watching Rory play. You know, gun to my head, you want to follow Koepka for 18 holes or Rory for 18 holes, I'm going to pick Rory. He's got a little more personality. You know, Koepka, he's a stoic robot. Now, in terms of stoic robots, I would, you know, Koepka's one of my favorite stoic robots to play because he hits the ball a million miles. He's got no emotion. But you know what? He was human on Sunday. When he hit that ball OB on Sunday in that final round, that was very un-Koepka. When Koepka's not Koepka, he's not Bob Gibson, and Rory took advantage of that. Now, think about Rory. If this was a CBS telecast and you had to drink every time Nick Faldo mentioned the bounce in Rory's step, you'd be drunk by the seventh hole, because Faldo loves mentioning Rory's bounce in his step. Whether he's doing well, there's a bounce in the step, or if he's not doing well, Rory doesn't have the bounce in his step, but he had that bounce in his step. He was bebopping up and down East Lake, so good for him. But to echo the other guys, you know, and Matt Russo, for example, Russo's like, Rory can win every Canadian Open from here till the end of time. It's all about the majors, and Rory has not won a major in about 5 years now, 4 or 5 years now. And so he's got to get back to winning those majors. You know, golf is a very human game. I mean, all the nerves playing that home game in Ireland a couple months ago and taking an 8 on that first hole. Don't tell me, like, athletes aren't human, because even Koepka can poop his pants, which he did. But I have mixed feelings about the condensed schedule. I loved watching the PGA. I loved watching the PGA in late August, you know, when it's hot and humid out and the players are all sweaty. I kind of like that. But, you know, now we can watch these big events at the end of August, and then it's a domino effect now. Now all the European tours got some juice with these Rolex events coming down the stretch, and now you got a lot of American players playing the BMW, playing in Switzerland, playing in Italy next month. So, you know, golf's not over for the degenerate gambler and, you know, the crazy golf fan like all of us here. But last thing about the equations and the point distributions, like, simple's good, but you need to, you know, they got to go back to the lab and find a better balance. So, you know, there's weight, but not too much weight on these on these first two events. I still think it's better than what they had previously when they had all sorts of permutations and projections and chaos going on. You know, that, remember last year, that final round, well, if Tiger does this, if Justin Rose does this, and, you know, too much thinking, less thinking, more doing, be better for everyone, the fans, the golfers, everyone wins.
Love it. Andy, before you go, though, I wanted to get your feel for UW this season. I mean, the changing quarterback is going to be a help, but they lost a lot of their guys on the defense. What's your thoughts on that? On them?
I love the analysis on the Pac-12 that you guys had last week. Listen, I could go on this diatribe. The entire Pac-12 is just this insecure. Every fan base in the Pac-12 makes the sensitive Met fans seem like so cool. Like they are insecure of the SEC. You know, the Washington fan is insecure of Oregon. The Washington State fan is insecure of Washington. They all hate Oregon. You know, the Utah fan is sensitive. You know, Arizona's sensitive. Arizona State. It's not good. It's not good energy. And John nailed it. Like, you know, Washington State is 10 times more entertaining to watch than UW. But you know what happens when Washington State plays Washington? They just poo their pants. They forget what's up and what's down. You know, Leach has this very entertaining offense. You know what doesn't work? When it snows. So what are you supposed to do when the elements get involved? You got to adjust. Mike Leach has yet to really learn that lesson. So until that happens, Peterson is going to do laps around Mike Leach. And now, having said that, like, I don't get this idea that Utah is this dark horse to win it all. I know Ron's a big Whittingham fan, but my eyes are still burning from that bowl game against Northwestern on New Year's Eve. Like, Utah, you know, this team doesn't beat themselves. Well, you led a team that, you know, Northwestern is not going to mistake confuse anyone from, you know, this high octane offense. And their offense is from hunger sometimes, and they let Northwestern come back from like a 21-3 point deficit. That was disgusting. Utah, I mean, they're more times than not, 9 out of 10 times, they're very disciplined. But I don't know, their offense lacks some firepower. And truth be told, in these big games, you need an offense where you're down 6, 3 minutes left, got to go down the field. And I don't know if they'll get that in a big spot. I mean, I hate to say it. I think it's UW's conference to lose.
I agree with that. But just really quickly, last thing for the who would you pick for the South then? If you're not high on Utah?
Oh, I mean, by default, it's got to be. Do you remember how boring that Pac-12 championship game was last
yes,
year?
Yes, I do.
Will it surprise you if it's deja vu all over again?
Right. Right. Wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. Yikes. Good call on that. Okay, so Andy, enjoy your appointment and everything. Have a good Labor Day weekend. We'll catch you later. I'll keep everybody else here.
All right, good luck, everybody. Talk to you later.
All right, man, good luck. That's Andy in Seattle. And now back to the golf crew, Mike and John. Let's go back to Mike for a sec. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much a good recap. I was thinking, you know, we'd have a nice. We were gonna do this as a separate show, but man, we kind of nailed all the points in one spot. So, I guess we can do some potpourri. Mike, anything else on your mind from the world of golf?
Yeah, I guess one kind of pretty major, well, I guess rule change is the wrong word, but policy change by the USGA, and they're already dubbing this the Hovland rule. Is that all right? Victor Hovland, who was the U.S. amateur champion and set the record for the lowest score by an amateur in a U.S. Open, he came up just shy of getting his tour card for the year during the PGA Tour season, where he was able to get, I think, 6 starts or something as a professional. So the USGA looked at that and said, you know what, this isn't quite fair. So the rule had always been that if you're the reigning U.S. Open champion, and I know the runner-up gets an exemption to the U.S. Open. I think the semifinalists might also, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So they said, all right, listen, you win an amateur event, or you do something as an amateur that qualifies you to get into the U.S. Open, we will no longer require that you remain an amateur to cash in on that reward. You can turn professional. So now you're going to see, you know, I know it was always a big thing that you would see a lot of high profile guys turn pro the week after the U.S. Open, which is usually the Travelers Championship. So you're now going to see an exodus of players turning pro. I mean, you know, I should know this, but I'm not 100% sure if the Heritage in Hilton Head is still an invitational tournament. If it still is, that might be a little bit harder to do because invitationals, I think, have 13 less slots in the tournament field. But you're going to see now the mass exodus of talented amateurs turning pro right after the Masters, and they'll play in the U.S. Open with their exemption, which I think is a good thing because, I mean, let's be honest. It worked out for Victor Hovland. He hasn't won a tournament on the web.com tour. It's now the Korn Ferry Tour, which is a terrible name, but getting back on point here. Victor Hovland he has gotten enough points in the Korn Ferry Tour playoffs to clinch his card. So he will be on the PGA Tour next year. Whether his priority ranking is good enough that he's getting into tournaments, we'll see. But I'm sure I'll get some sponsor invites. So I think it's a good thing. It will give these high-level amateurs more tournaments where they're eligible to accrue points and able to get their cards, you know, if they play well enough throughout the year. And to continue this theme, we saw Matthew Wolf win in Minnesota, which, you know, I think we had some questions about how it was going to work that the senior tour players, you know, tore it up. But that turned out to be a very exciting tournament. So a good start for the new Minnesota tournament. So Matthew Wolf won. Colin Morikawa won. So there's definitely some excitement among these young, recently players who have recently turned professionals. So we'll see what Hovland, Wolf, and Morikawa have to offer. And I guess the other big thing that has really happened is, you know, the slow play issue is getting more and more traction and more talking time. We saw, you know, Brooks Koepka basically called out Bryson DeChambeau, although, yeah, he was criticizing slow play more than DeChambeau himself. But anyway, DeChambeau, after a couple of videos of him, like one of him taking like 2.5 minutes to hit a pitch shot, and then another one for him taking like 1.5 minutes to hit an 8-foot putt came out, and I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. And, you know, sure, DeChambeau was supposed to be this genius. When you can see his responses to it, where he's just like blaming other people walking and the caddies and all the stuff, it just shows this guy doesn't get it. But he goes to Brooks Koepka's caddy and he's like, oh, if he has a problem with me, tell him to come say something to me. So of course, Brooks Koepka's caddy tells him, and Koepka strolls right over to DeChambeau and they talk. But you know what? At the very least, it seems like they're starting to make some traction with stuff. And I just think, you know, when you have Koepka saying this has to change and Rory McIlroy saying this has to change, and you even had Adam Scott say, hey, listen, penalize me first. Let me be the first guy to do. I'll be happy to be the one who lets the dominoes fall. I think we finally might be getting somewhere with speeding up this play. And I said Brandel Chambly because he just had a take that is just so clueless. He's like, well, this isn't about slow play. This is about like changing societal values and blah, blah, blah. Hold on. I do agree that societal values and our generation specifically doesn't have much patience. We want things quick, on demand, etc. But golf should not, the professional should not be playing 5.5-hour rounds. It's just ridiculous. There's no reason for a professional round to take really anywhere much over 4 hours and 15 minutes. I don't care how much is at stake. So hopefully this slow play problem will continue to be addressed, and maybe we'll finally see some penalties imposed for the lack of playing promptly.
Yeah, that's it. I like this movement as well. And, you know, change truly does begin with players. Ultimately, they have to want it. It's just like when you want to lose weight, you have to want to lose weight. And if the players want the change, I think it's going to come that much faster. So that's good to see, definitely. John, I wanted to get your thoughts on that, too. I mean, what is your feel for the pace-of-play scenario?
I mean, I get they're playing for a lot of money, but, like, sometimes it's just ridiculous. Like, that video with DeChambeau taking 20 minutes to hit a 10-foot putt, and then you could see the expression on his playing partners. It's just like, oh, my God, dude, hit the ball. It just, you know, as an amateur golfer, if I go and play 18 in 4.5 hours, I'm really mad. That's slow. I mean, professionals should be able to play in 4.5 hours or less. And, you know, 5-hour rounds is just, it's just ridiculous, and it's nothing's really going to change unless they start handing out strokes, because that's the only thing that'll get people moving. And the tour will never hand out strokes, especially like in a big tournament or to a star player. They might hit like the guy like number 150 on the money list, you know, on a Thursday round. Okay, I could see them doing that, but like in a major, if there's someone that's playing really slow, they'll never hit them with strokes, and they should. Because that's the only reason to get people to pick up the pace. But until that happens, I really don't see. I mean, it's good that the players are talking about it, but you don't really see any change as of right now on the tour. So it just that is one thing about the game that you would like to see changed. I agree with what Mike was saying about this new crop of young players, very exciting talents. You know, Morikawa and Wolf, and then especially Victor Hovland. He might have had the best season of them all, and he didn't win. He had like 4 or 5 top 15 finishes in his little limited run this summer. But you knew he was going to get his tour card because he's just a really good player. And you know, he won. He didn't win, but he had a good enough finishes on the Korn Ferry Finals to get his card. And we'll see. Wouldn't be surprised me to see if he won next year. And he'll probably be able to get into all these fall events that are coming up. Starting in a couple of weeks, this season will start again at the tournament in West Virginia, the Greenbrier. It used to be part of the regular FedEx Cup schedule in July, but now they moved it to kick off the fall schedule. So he'll be able to get into some of these tournaments, and I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, to see him win one of these. The fields are much not as strong in the fall, and especially the ones here in America. You know, they have those couple tournaments overseas. The HSBC Champions is a World Golf Championship event, so that's pretty strong. And then they're going to have a new tournament in Japan, which Tiger and Rory are already playing at, are already committed to playing, so that'll probably be a strong field. But the rest of the tournaments, not so much. So you could definitely see Victor Hovland or some of these younger guys that are just getting out on tour, maybe picking up a win coming up in the fall series. So I'll try to catch a little bit of that here and there when I can. It's always interesting. I always like to watch some golf, and maybe even on the, like during the weekdays, like Thursday and Friday, watch more, and obviously follow the scores on the weekend. So, the 2019-2020 season will be upon us in a couple weeks. So definitely excited for that.
Oh, look at that. It's already coming up. Huh? Wow. That's pretty funny. Anything that we should be looking at as far as the fall series, John, I'll get to you first actually on this one.
Yeah, like I said, those tournaments overseas are pretty good. Mm-hmm. The HSBC Champions in China, the new one in Japan, and then the I think it's called the CJ Cup in South Korea. So those three-week span are pretty good. There's limited field. There's only like 70 or 80 guys. And then what I like about it is it's like overnight. So right, you just watch the long day of college football. What better to end your night if you can't sleep than watching some golf until like 2 a.m. and, you know, seeing all the great players in Asia playing these tournaments. So those are three good tournaments. Like I said, the Greenbrier event just got moved to the fall series, as well as the event in Houston. The Houston Open is now in the fall. The tournament in Mississippi, I forget the name of it, but that used to be an opposite field event. That has its own week now in the fall. And then the usual stops in Mexico, Sea Island, Georgia,
Vegas, Northern California. They have a tournament. So it's a pretty diverse schedule. I was reading that Steph Curry was going to have a tournament in the fall series, and it just didn't work out for this year. But going forward, there's going to be one in the Bay Area. So, I mean, like I said, the fields aren't great. I mean, you're not going to be getting, the top 20 players in the world playing in one of these. Other than that one tournament in China, that'll be a really good field to watch. If you're going to watch any of these, stay up and watch that one, the HSBC Champions. But, I mean, they're PGA Tour events, and, you know, just we'll try to follow them and, watch a little bit when we can. So I really used to not like the fall series, but I kind of think it's good to kind of see some of the new players and, just watch some golf in the fall.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's been more juice in that lately, as I seem to agree with you on that. And Mike, let's get your thoughts also on the fall series.
Well, I'll just quickly mention, I forgot to mention this during my, first potpourri segment, is that, the Korn Ferry Tour Championship is this week. So, Saturday obviously is going to be dedicated to college football, and we do have some games Sunday, but I would definitely suggest to anyone is that to tune in Friday afternoon, because you are going to see guys who are on that, well, with the way the Korn Ferry Tour with the tour cards works for the PGA Tour is what they do is they take the top 25 after the regular season, and those guys automatically get tour cards. And then they play in the playoffs to, like, improve their priority ranking, which can improve what tournaments they'll get into. Then what happens is that the top 75 of the Korn Ferry Tour and numbers 125 to 200 are all eligible for the Korn Ferry. 125 to 200 of the PGA Tour are all eligible for the Korn Ferry Tour playoffs. And the top 25, after three events in that, they give out 25 more PGA Tour cards for the following season. So they used to have this not at the stadium course at Sawgrass, but at the another course that's part of Sawgrass called Dyes Valley, and it was always fun to watch. But they're having this course called Victoria National here, which is supposed to be a good course, apparently. But you will see, if you tune in on Friday, guys who are right near that cut line who need to make the cut to have a chance to get their PGA Tour card, you will see guys blowing up left and right, guys succumbing to the pressure. It's always fun because you see some crazy things happen, and you see guys playing under a ton of pressure. So it's fun to watch. I don't know if you care so much about who wins the event on that Sunday, although a couple of years ago, I remember Emiliano Grillo won the what was then the Web.com Tour Championship, and he actually came out the way it worked then. It was the next week was the PGA Tour. Actually, it might be – no, it's 2 weeks. But he came out the next week and won the first event in the PGA Tour season. So it definitely is interesting to watch on that Friday. So I would definitely give my endorsement to that. Should be a good show. And then, yeah, the fall series. I definitely think the highlight of the fall series is going to be, I guess, what we can dub the Asian swing, going to South Korea and then Japan and then China. So obviously a lot of high profile commitments to the Zozo Championship. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. I don't know. In Japan, and then obviously the it's a World Golf Championships event in China. And actually, I know this is going to be an opposite field event, but I still think it's going to be a pretty cool atmosphere. They are doing something this year called the Bermuda Championship. So it'll be opposite the WGC in China at Port Royal Golf Club, which I Googled it. It's got some absolutely beautiful holes. So Bermuda should be a good venue for a tour event. Unfortunately, it's an opposite field one, but that might be worth watching. And then, yeah, the Greenbrier in a couple of weeks. It's a great course. Probably won't be a very good field, but definitely worth watching. The Houston Open, which the PGA Tour went through hoops to save, but good job by them because I know they had a lot of problems at one point trying to secure sponsor fees but the tour just kept going, okay, we'll give you to this point, that point. They just, they never closed the door on them. So good job there. So there's been a tournament in Houston for, it's one of the longest running tournaments. They didn't want that to end. So Houston will be on the schedule October 10th to 13th. Obviously these events are eclipsed by both college and the NFL, but you know, at Thursday afternoon, Friday afternoon, it's definitely good to be able to switch on some golf in the fall.
Yeah, I like the idea of doing the Houston Open then. It would be easier to attend also because it won't be as hot, right?
Well, the Houston Open was in April before.
Oh,
so
was it in April?
It
oh, hot. Okay, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, never mind. But so it should be, that doesn't really affect the weather. But still, it could be a fun week. Like, imagine you're over there and you have your Friday and your Thursday and Friday. You do some golf and either the Texans will be in town or even potentially the Astros would be in the postseason at that point. So, yeah, I mean, that sounds like a fun weekend. Oh, okay, that was it. Okay. So let's just close it out with some final thoughts. I'll go to John first.
Yeah. Final thoughts on golf. I mean, it was a great season. Obviously, you know, the Masters was, yeah, it is what it was. I mean, Tiger had a phenomenal comeback from all of his injuries and won. And, you know, I'm tending to think that might have been his last hurrah, but what a way to go out on top. I mean, he came back and proved that he could do it. So he'll have that moment forever. So good for him. And then Koepka kind of dominated at the PGA. You had Gary Woodland at the U.S. Open, and then Shane Lowry at the Open Championship, and Rory McIlroy winning the Players and the FedEx Cup. So it was a great season. One crazy thing to note is there's not been a playoff all season long on the PGA Tour. Like, the last playoff was in the fall of last year, which is amazing, considering you usually get like 7 or 8 playoffs a year, and there's not been a playoff all year. So that's just kind of a bizarre stat. I know it's kind of like an anomaly and just kind of an outlier, but still, it's just kind of crazy. But
yeah,
it was, like I said, the new schedule for golf with one big tournament or an event a month, I think, really worked out well. And you know, we'll look forward to it all going next year. Like I said, try to check out some fall golf, and it'll be fun. And then football, yeah, it's here, so we're gonna enjoy every minute of it, because like Andy said, you know, you blink and you know it'll be week 7 in the middle of October, so we definitely will enjoy it while it's here.
I love it. And here's to a good Labor Day weekend. Hope you guys have some fun things planned. John, really quickly, what any barbecues for you or anything like that?
No, I don't think so. I have a 4-day weekend scenario, so might get some golf in at some point. And then just kind of play low, just watch some football, and, you know, just kind of hang out and enjoy my time off, basically.
Yeah, it's a good weekend to start the football season, too, right? I mean, you're going to get a Sunday game, and I know that there are some years we had a Monday game, too. I don't know if I forgot whether there was a Monday game this year, but
yeah, that Notre Dame-Louisville game is on Monday night.
Oh, okay, so that's a Monday game. That's right. Because I remember it was a year or two ago, one of the Monday games was like Florida State versus somebody, and it was a whopper. I think something, one team or the other team won by a whole lot of points, and it was like, whoa. trying to remember what that was, but wasn't it like Ole Miss versus somebody? I can't remember anymore, but it looked like fun. So anyway, Mike, let's go to you for final thoughts.
Yeah, I'll just echo what John said and what I was talking about at the very beginning. Obviously, we kicked off the golf season with a historic win by Tiger Woods. Then we continued on with a Brooks Koepka in the midst of a really historically dominant stretch of golf with the PGA Championship moving to March, which I think was a big success. Then a couple lower profile winners, but you know what? Hey, I think that goes to speak to the depth of the game today. So it was a fun season. We will have a President's Cup in December, which we haven't mentioned yet, at Royal Melbourne, which is considered one of the best golf courses in the world. So I don't think we'll be talking golf on this program between now and then. So I will say definitely watch that, because that is just an incredible venue. Hopefully it's a close event. So a good season. Unfortunately, we have not quite 8 months, but almost 8 months till the Masters. So, but it won't be very long. As all of us get older, time seems to go by faster and faster. I don't have much planned for Labor Day myself. Haven't played much golf lately because of this foot injury I got. I don't know what the hell's wrong with me, but keeps up much longer. I have to go to the doctor about this. So, well, I don't know. I might try to play 9 holes at some point later this weekend just to see what happens if it doesn't swell up too bad. But we'll see. Hopefully, I can get back out a few times. You know, when I can find some time off between my law school studies. So. might go out one night or so for this Labor Day weekend, but I'll just try to relax a little bit and enjoy, because we will get a full slate of college football, so it should be fun.
Absolutely. And I do hope you have a good Labor Day weekend. Hope the golf goes well. Last thing for you, Mike. Will you be going to some of these Rutgers games during the season?
Oh, Jesus. I mean, really, what's the point? Seriously, it's true. I mean, it's going to cost way too much to get in there.
Yeah.
They're not any good. You know, my senior year of high school, I went to, I think, all but one Rutgers home game. And then they were, I mean, granted, I was getting the tickets from someone. It's not like I had to buy them. But, I mean, I don't really see the point. They're not any good. So, what, I can watch them. I haven't really looked at their schedule that closely. I can watch some good Big Ten team. Who comes in there? Does Michigan come in there this year, or Iowa State, or one of those teams? Do I really want to watch them come in and beat Rutgers 62-0? What's the point of that? Seriously.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Listen, I do hope they get a little bit better. They at least can be somewhat competitive against, like, you know, Maryland's and teams like that. But I don't know. It's just, you feel kind of, it just seems like they're in a terrible place right now. So Hopefully it does improve. I will try to check out a few basketball games. I mean, right now, though, a Rutgers Seton Hall ticket, because that's a game I wanted to go to. Granted, I think more of these will become available, but it's at Rutgers. It's not at Seton Hall. It's Seton Hall plays at the Prudential Center, so there's a ton of tickets. But right now, it's like $170 a pop to get into Rutgers Seton Hall basketball. So,
oh, wow.
Hopefully, yeah, yeah. People, that is a hot ticket here in Jersey. But
that makes sense. Yeah.
I will look forward to seeing some Rutgers basketball games. A few of those might be pretty good.
Okay. Oh, very, very good, you know, very good synopsis. And as I said during the Open Championship show, it's been a real pleasure covering all the golf with you guys, all the majors, and this bonus show is actually a really good idea by you both. And so thanks for all your guys' good expertise and humor during the golf season. It's sad to see it go, but on the other hand, you know, we're not too far from more golf. Although, as you said, Mike, the Masters is 8 months away, but the football season will make half of that go pretty fast, I think. So, all in all, good stuff. Have a good weekend, everybody. Thank you again, John, Mike. Have a good one, and all the best. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Take care, guys.
See ya.
All right, fellas. That's it for all of us tonight. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, John. Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Andy. And thank you guys for listening to the program. I'm Dave Medina. Hope you enjoyed this hybrid program. We're back with football picks for week 2, and we'll keep looking into other topics as we go along. Much more to come. We also want to remind you that our MLB August Update show with Jerry and Piscataway is also on the podcast feed. Look for it at Ditka or at ditka.com. I'm Dave Medina. Have a wonderful, wonderful Labor Day weekend. We'll see you next time.